Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we'll talk about the Antonio Brown situation seemingly wrapping up, at least in an NFL context. Oh boy, a team that looks like it's going to be playing 16 road games this year. But first, Giants fans, are you guys excited? You feel like you got a quarterback. You look a lot like your other quarterback, the one you got tired of, but the new quarterback do things that the other quarterback didn't do before. You got yourself a win. It was a win in a dramatic, exciting fashion. You probably should have lost because Jameis should have thrown the ball a little farther for Mike Evans, and they should have made the field goal, but whatever, baby, a win's a win. You got Daniel Jones. Y'all booed him on the day he got drafted. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's like, well, you know, I wasn't one of the people that was booing him, actually. It was them other folks that was booing him, me. And you know I'm nothing but an optimist. But you guys have Daniel Jones. And look, I don't know if Daniel Jones is going to be good. I didn't get much of an indication of anything previous to indicate that he was going to be good. But, hey, man, for you guys, it seems that he might bring it. And if he does bring it for you, honestly, that's good for everybody. I don't think that the league is good with the Giants being terrible. And the one thing that you could say about the Eli Manning era for the Giants is that really up until recently, those two Super Bowls notwithstanding, they'd never been like really good in a regular season. I think they got one season in the Eli era that was over 11 wins. One, I believe it was. And that was the year that Plaxico accidentally shot himself. Remember that? Anyway, but you guys were, you know, maybe never great, but you were never going to be bad. And then Eli got bad, and then y'all were bad. And so now you got something that make you feel like we ain't going to be bad no more. And nobody wants to root for a bad football team. Look around the league, surrounded by people with bad football teams. You don't want to be that. And at the very least, when you get a good first game out of your brand new quarterback, you feel like, yo, it ain't going to be that no more. Good for you. Way to go. You know, Gabe, you happy for him?
Danny Dimes, baby.
Oh, man. Yeah, I forgot that we're doing that. That's what they're going to call him, Danny Dimes. All it took was the preseason, and they decided they was going to call him Danny Dimes.
All it took was one game. One game. Danny Dimes, baby.
But you was probably like that after you got you one game of Garoppolo, huh?
Jimmy G is kind of a nickname.
Yeah.
So he already had that nickname.
But
he
I mean, just the
need
excitement.
A new nickname.
You know, just the excitement. You know, like you feel like you had something. And let me tell you something, boy. It ain't nothing quite like when a white dude do something you don't think white dudes can do. When Daniel Jones started taking off running with the ball, people were so excited. You see that game where they put it up where apparently he had the fastest miles per hour while running of anybody other than Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray, which screamed out to me them just saying, you know, he just as fast as the black dudes.
Trying to make him sound superhuman or something.
Yeah, but the thing that I found interesting about people highlighting that, and I guess there's something to it, right? Like, I think that Jones is more athletic than most people had given him credit for being, but I also think that people need to acknowledge that them not giving him credit for being athletic probably had to do with their own little biases against white people. And y'all need to stop underestimating white people. There ain't too many places where y'all underestimate white people, but them two places are the track and the dance floor. Like, I feel like after Daniel Jones made that run, all he needed to do was come on the sideline and start doing some dances, then y'all completely lose y'all's mind. But as I was thinking about this, when they started pointing out that thing about the miles per hour stats, yo, look through the rest of the league. Who else exactly is supposed to be this competition? Like, the league isn't really overrun at this point with really fast quarterbacks. Like, is Daniel Jones faster than, say, Patrick Mahomes? I'm really not sure. Part of it being that Mahomes doesn't wind up in situations that are going to require him to run his own read and go straight forward in the way that you will with Daniel Jones. But I'm going up and down the league right now, and outside of Jackson and Murray, who else are the fast quarterbacks in the NFL? Like, Aaron Rodgers has gotten old. Dak Prescott, I think we say, is athletic, but not necessarily fast. Similar place with Russell Wilson, plus his legs ain't as long as those other cats are, in, you know, that's out here. Cam Newton is hurt. Jameis Winston, he just black. I guess Gabe, maybe Taysom Hill.
Mariota.
I did forget about Mariota. We can put him on the list. He would be a guy that maybe should be fast, or maybe, just maybe, should be in an offense that lets him do fast people things. Maybe they should consider such a thing. But I'm going up and down, and I'm like, yeah, Daniel Jones may be the fastest of the white dudes, but as much as we talk about the era of, like, quarterback mobility and stuff like that, like a dude like Baker Mayfield, for example. Baker Mayfield isn't really fast. He can move around, but he ain't really fast. Josh Allen, Jaheim can move. Speaking of which, Gabe, should we start calling Taysom Hill Tyrone Hill?
Why Tyrone Hill?
I mean, because he's kind of in the same situation fast. As, whatchamacallit, as Josh Allen is, where he exhibits a lot of them black quarterback things, but he's not black, so you don't talk about him in that way. So maybe he could be Tyrone Hill, except for the fact is they wouldn't have Tyrone Hill out here in a single-digit number. I guess Joe Webb got to do that, pretend to do other stuff, but they thought he might actually be a quarterback. But, like, nobody believed in Joe Webb in the way that they believe in Taysom Hill. I halfway believed in Joe Webb once, and then he played in that playoff game, and I was like, yo, man, you need to be out there and get your kick coverage on. Like, that's your situation. That's what you need to be doing. But, no, man, good for you, Giants fans. You guys got a quarterback. I mean, just the thought that you might have a quarterback has got to make your whole situation feel a lot better. Like, I quit the Falcons a while ago. Been off that narcotic. But the one thing I do have to say for the Falcons, and this is kind of an underrated thing with them, basically for the last 25 years, the Falcons have legitimately believed, and rightly so, that they had a quarterback. No lie. It goes from Jeff George to Chris Chandler, who was actually a good quarterback, to Michael Vick to Matt Ryan, right? Like, there was always reason to believe they had a quarterback. They might not have been as happy with their quarterback as they wanted to be, but they always felt like they always had reason to believe that they did, in fact, have a quarterback. And the Giants, well, they had a couple years where they had no reason to believe that they had a quarterback. They had a guy who was a quarterback once, but then he stopped being a quarterback. So now you guys got a quarterback. And you know what would be really good to have, like, with your quarterback? One of the two or three best wide receivers in the NFL. Odell Beckham. You used to have that. Now you don't have that. You traded him away for a draft pick and some stuff, but the first round pick you could have still got Daniel Jones without having to give up that draft pick because they used that draft pick on Dexter Lawrence because nothing is more Dave Gettleman than trading Odell Beckham away for somebody who weighs 350 pounds. No shade to the dude that weighs 350 pounds. That's just what Dave Gettleman's into. That's what he chased. That's what he dig. You guys telling me you wouldn't be happy if you had Odell Beckham around here? And see, that's what's got to be frustrating when you got a team and you feel like they actually got something right. But then after they actually get something right, you realize that in the process of getting something right, they got something terribly wrong. Is that going to be the existence for them from here on out? Is this going to be y'all's life? Is this what everything is going to be with Daniel Jones? And by the way, we still don't actually know, Gabe, if Daniel Jones is good.
It's one game.
It's one game. Who do they play next week? Wow, looks like a win, Gabe. They get to play Washington at home.
Count two for Daniel Jones.
Right. Then they get the Vikings. And who knows? Kirk Cousins might look like Daniel Jones, good or bad, when that come around. Ooh, then they go play the Patriots on national television. And the Patriots, for the first time in a while, have like a legitimately dominant defense. Like, they got some things going. But they would be so much better if they had Odell Beckham. And the crazy part about them not having Odell Beckham is that Odell Beckham is over there in Cleveland where the team gets the ball first in what, goal at the four? Run four plays where they don't give the ball to Nick Chubb or Baker Mayfield even bothers to look at Odell Beckham on the left side of the field? How do you think he's feeling right now? Like, they told him that he was finally going, you know, he was going to get to play with a quarterback for the first time. And now he's over there playing with a quarterback that maybe, not as good as y'all thought. Is it possible that Baker Mayfield is maybe, just maybe, not as good as y'all thought? Because, see, the thing that got lost in this about Mayfield was they won some games last year, but they didn't win no games against good teams. They went 1-6-1 last year as a team. Against teams with records that were 500 or better. The tie was against Pittsburgh, I want to say, in the first game of the season. The one win over a team over 500 was over the Ravens, except for the fact that the Ravens were still starting Joe Flacco at the time. So, like, I don't even know if that necessarily matters. What they were able to do last year was beat up on not good teams. And look, beating up on not good teams was definitely a step in the right direction for the Browns. And I guess they're going to have some more not good teams that they play on their schedule because as things look presently, that division might not have good teams. Like, the Ravens might turn out to be good, but that, I mean, they played, what, the Cardinals and the Dolphins in the first 2 weeks. So we don't know what to make of those first two wins. And they, I mean, Kansas City definitely outplayed them fairly handily in the game that they just played. So who knows, maybe that's what the secret to the Cleveland success is going to be. They just need to start playing against teams in the division who are also not that good. But we got way ahead of ourselves on Baker Mayfield. Way ahead of ourselves. Did you know that Baker Mayfield, Gabe, throwing 19 interceptions in the 16 games that he's played?
That's a lot of picks.
And let me put that in perspective for you, right? Because there's some cat, there's a bunch of cats out here that throw too many interceptions in this league. One of them, for example, is Jameis Winston. Now, last season, I want to say Jameis Winston threw 14 interceptions in 11 games, and he didn't even start in all those games. Like, he was an absolute giveaway machine. But we acknowledge before last season came around that Jameis Winston's got a problem with giving away the ball. Well, in all the seasons where Jameis Winston has played 16, well, only, not all, that's not fair, he's only played in two. But Jameis Winston as a rookie, 15 interceptions in 16 games. His second year, 18 interceptions in 16 games. 11 interceptions in 13 the year after that. All I'm saying is Baker Mayfield throws the ball away about as often as Jameis Winston does. So is it possible that maybe, just maybe, we got a little ahead of ourselves when where we were on talking about how good Baker Mayfield was? And I think that Baker Mayfield will be good, but it ain't happening right now. And they got a coach that they hired specifically because Baker Mayfield liked him. And now it looks like that coach might not be the right guy to actually coach Baker Mayfield. And that coach, by the way, Gabe, might be on the hot seat.
Yes, he is.
Already.
That's your man, Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah, man. And I mean, look, I'm not saying that to knock Freddie. I'm just saying, A, this franchise has demonstrated no level of patience with a head coach. But B, they were sold the idea that this was going to be a team that made it, that was a playoff team. It doesn't look like a playoff team right now. Mayfield doesn't look like a playoff quarterback. The dude Njoku, they put him on the injured reserve because he got hurt, I want to say, in the second game of the season. Like, none of this looks right, even though they've got all this talent. So, like, I'm going to give Freddie Kitchens some advice. It ain't hard. Throw the ball to Odell. Get a ball to Nick. Like, I bet if you start with those two things, it is amazing what might result. Because what they need to do is look out for their quarterback and make things easy on him because he's not ready yet. Not ready to be a guy that's, like, leading your team to some for real winning. And it's okay that your second-year quarterback isn't ready for that yet. That is perfectly reasonable that he would not be ready for that. But people were just so gassed up, and they like Baker Mayfield so much that we had this. I also want to run this by you about Baker Mayfield. He sure is in a lot of commercials. And I don't really have a problem with him being in a lot of commercials. I just know that sometimes y'all decide that people care more about their brand than they care about winning based on the fact that they did in a lot of commercials that most of y'all would have taken the money to do. Well, Baker Mayfield right now is the guy that's throwing 19 interceptions in 16 games, but he's in all the commercials. Y'all going to be mad at that, or y'all only get mad at that when it happens with other people? Just a fair question for me to ask. Anyway, good luck to the Giants. Be patient. Good luck to the Browns. I mean, I would tell you to be patient, but y'all ain't going to do that. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about that terrible football team in Washington. But first, after hearing me talk about ButcherBox for months, if you haven't taken advantage of their amazing offers, you need to listen up. Every month, ButcherBox delivers humanely raised, 100% grass-fed, beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage breed pork, and wild-caught Alaskan salmon directly to your door. Choose from four curated boxes or customize your own box with all your favorite cuts. And with free shipping, ButcherBox makes getting high-quality meat with no added hormones or antibiotics easier than ever. The last box I got had ground beef, got some bacon, had some pork chops. Went upstairs, put those pork chops on the grill. They were fantastic. And if my method isn't for you, ButcherBox has a ton of awesome recipes and resources on their website that'll help you bring out all the flavor of each cut of meat you get from ButcherBox. And this month, ButcherBox is offering new members $20 off your first box plus free ground beef for the life of your subscription when you sign up at ButcherBox.com/Bomani. That's right. In addition to all the great meat you get, ButcherBox is knocking $20 off your first box and throwing in 2 pounds of free ground beef in every box for the life of your subscription when you sign up at ButcherBox.com/Bomani. ButcherBox.com/Bomani. So I went and met somebody up for dinner, and I came to the crib, right? I get to the game, and it doesn't look like it was anybody's level of excitement. I'm not even sure what the score is. I think it might have been 7-0. I don't know. But I noticed shortly after I turned on the television, Chicago did, like, something good. Like, they made a good play, you know, something that would, like, get people excited if you were rooting for Chicago. And I thought that game was in Soldier Field. It was loud as hell in Washington after that happened. And look, I understand that a lot of the fan base in Washington has kind of been like, nah, we not about this, right? We not with it. Stadium is in an inconvenient location. Everything else, da, da, da. But the D.C. metro area still got a boatload of people. Still got a lot of people. Chicago filled that thing up last night. And I can't imagine how demoralizing it must be if you play on a football team and you realize, damn, we going to be playing 16 road games. Like, what you call it? The Chargers are going through that, but the Chargers are in a, what I would term to be a different situation in that the Chargers are in a new city, a city, by the way, that for much of its existence had been rooting against the Chargers. Their old city is just a couple hours away, but them folks is a little bit salty about the way that everything went down, so they're not going to be the ones that's up making that ride. Like, that's not going to be their play, but like, I get why it is that they don't really have a fan base as it stands right now. Man, Washington been over there about something like 80 years or whatever like that. And when I was a kid, Washington was all about that football team. They could not get enough of that football team. That was what they were about. Yo, I have never that I can recall seeing a team that is just 100% giving up. On his football team. Just surrendered. Like, no, we don't want that no more. Why? Because of that guy. What guy? That guy. The guy that owns the team. The one thing that you cannot replace. The one thing that you cannot change. The one thing that you are stuck with. The only way that they gonna take a team away from a guy like that is if he is caught on tape saying that you can't bring Magic Johnson to the games. That's the only way that's gonna happen. But Gabe, something tells me that Daniel Snyder would love to have Magic Johnson around.
And why is that?
I don't know. I just get that vibe. Like, he just seemed like the sort of guy that would be in awe of Magic Johnson. See, he younger, right? Like, Donald Sterling, he was too old to be, like, fully respected Magic. But Magic, hey, man, I sat in here and listened to Pablo call Magic incompetent on television all day long. Next thing you know, Magic rolled up in the studio and Pablo was in the trance. You know what I'm saying? Like, Daniel Snyder wouldn't do that, so they're not going to take the team away from Daniel Snyder. So y'all just stuck with that dude. Y'all stuck with that dude. Let me see what else it is that y'all are out here stuck with. You're stuck with a stadium that you don't like. He built a stadium that was too big. He built it in a bad location. He built it in one that's not particularly accessible by public transportation or through other means. Like, they're just getting a lot of things wrong that are over there. They left tackle don't want to play for him no more. He just said, nah, y'all got this. I'm good. Looked like they was going to make the playoffs last year. Then Alex Smith had his leg mangled, and now they out here with Case Keenum. And I don't think the Case Keenum is necessarily very good, but I don't know how good he's supposed to be given everything that's going on with that little franchise that they got going. And I'm really trying to think, like, you know what Washington is becoming? They becoming like RC Cola. You know about RC Cola, right?
I have seen it before in grocery stores.
All right, see, that's okay, that's where this gets to be fun, right? RC Cola used to be the lick. Like, it used to be hot in the streets. Not when I was a kid, but it used to be hot in these streets. And then, like, the RC's in the store, and you ask, you'd be like, you are right now, Gabe. Like, I've seen it in the store, and people are like, yo, no, that used to be hot. That used to be what was up. That's kind of where Washington is. Like, people would never know. This used to be one of the proudest franchises that you had. They went, they had a, what you call it, a 9-year period where they won 3 Super Bowls. It was 10 years. Either way, 3 Super Bowls. It's 10 years. Won 10 Super Bowls. Yeah, man. That used to be their get down. That used to be what was up. Don't nobody care about them. Don't nobody care. Not even the people that is supposed to care about them. Don't nobody care about them. Like, it's all kinds of people in all kinds of places, right? That they team used to be good, but they haven't been good. Like the Cleveland Browns, for example. Think about this for a second. Cleveland has never turned on the sad sack Browns. And they even left for a little bit. I mean, I know the team they got now is not exactly the same team, but still, they even dipped for a little bit. And they still came back. Right? Like, what happened in Cleveland is a lot like what happened in Charlotte with the basketball team. But the thing that happened in Charlotte with the basketball team, shout out to my man, Rod, blackguywhotips.com. Happy belated birthday to him. He made this point about Charlotte to me once where he was like, look, the thing went bad with the Hornets, with George Shinn. And George Shinn left. But he was like, but they weren't just mad at George Shinn. They were mad at the whole NBA as a result. And then they got a basketball team that they, you know, it's there, but they don't really care about it, right? They never came back around. But they came back a little bit. Cleveland, they came right back to the Browns, man. They were like, yo, we could never stay mad at you. And they ain't won anything since 1964. Washington managed to get a whole fan base, a loyal, loving fan base to quit them. And look, I know how hard it is to get people to quit. Right? Like, you think about just in life how hard it is for people to just be like, nah, I ain't doing that no more. Right? They got any positive memories associated with it. It ain't easy for people to do that, man. It's not. And they looked at that football team and they're like, the deuce. No mas. I ain't doing this no more. Anyway, yeah, Washington football team, very bad. Play the music. All right, so Antonio Brown doesn't have a job in the NFL. I don't think he's going to have another job in the NFL ever again. I don't think he's going to have a job anywhere ever again, probably through his own choosing because, you know, Antonio Brown, like, should be rich. Although, Gabe, he don't be paying people.
He doesn't even pay his super producers making all the videos.
Yeah, I wonder about that. We need to ask, like, who does and doesn't get paid? Like, I feel like we need to ask him that.
What do you mean he doesn't pay his people?
I mean, did you read, like, the Sports Illustrated story?
I didn't see that.
Oh, no, it was just, like, of course they were, like, you know, the allegations of these, you know, sexual misconduct. But also, like, a running theme with him is people suing him for, like, $10,000 because he's just not paying them.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, like, we're not even talking about big amounts of money. We're talking about stuff like that. And so I wonder if, like, so I don't know your bill-paying strategy, right? But my bill-paying strategy has always been pay the rent, pay the lights, buy groceries. Work the rest out from there, right? But those are the three priorities. Pay the rent, pay the lights, buy groceries, right? As my homeboy once told me, I may be broke, but I'll never be hungry. That was always my approach to handling the game, right? Apparently, Antonio Brown, my guess is he pays the video dude before he pays the rent. Because if you don't pay the video dude, you can't put out videos. And I don't think anything is more important than him to pay the videos. Or at the very least, I know what Billy definitely pay first, the phone. He is so random. Like, you got to understand. And I noticed we're talking to enough people. He just sends the most random collection of people text messages that say way more about his life than they probably should. Like, let me count this in my head. 1, 2, 3, 4. I had 4 random people that before all this started happening, I didn't know knew Antonio Brown. And they all, it turns out, I don't know if they have intimate relationships with Antonio Brown, but he definitely shares intimate things with them. And these are, like, totally disparate people, like, no link in life and no one that you could, like, only one of them could I, like, really, like, okay, I can see how y'all were cool. Like, I can see how y'all, like, how this happened. Only one of them. And it's so weird, man. It's so weird. And so he just sends text messages and he sends these videos out and he sends the videos out to all kinds of people. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Right. And so he got on the Twitters on Sunday morning and he started talking about Bob Kraft and the stuff with him in the massage parlor. He mentioned the allegation against Ben Roethlisberger. And it's like, what? And so I said on Twitter when he did that, he needs to realize that it doesn't matter whether or not he has a point. And let me tell you, people who've been around this world, you know, been around the block a few times, they understood exactly what I was saying. Sometimes it reaches a place where you having a point doesn't matter. Somebody else might can have that point and it matters, but you having that point doesn't matter. Assuming for a brief moment that you do have a point. In this case, I don't actually think Antonio Brown had a point, even though he thought he had a point, even though there is a point in the point he did not make. Okay, I'm going to untangle that for you right fast, right? Antonio Brown seemed to be indicating, why is it that I got fired when people accuse me of sexual misconduct when these other people have been accused of sexual misconduct and they get to keep their jobs? The problem with that logic is you did not lose your job for being accused of sexual misconduct. You lost your job for being unreliable. You lost your job for being a wild card. Like, an allegation of sexual misconduct against Antonio Brown, but Antonio Brown doesn't start doing stuff on his phone? Antonio Brown is okay. Because Antonio Brown sent that text message to the his most recent accuser, and this is the artist who accused him of commissioning her to paint a mural in his home, and then at some point you turn around and all he's butt naked with a towel over himself, I guess is the way to put it. A small towel, shall we say. And he sends not just a text message to her, he sends a text message to five other people, allegedly sends a text message to five other people. And one of those people was his lawyer. And I'll make the point here that I made on television, which is his lawyer was on the text, but his lawyer never said that it was not Antonio Brown who sent the text. And he's got one of them, the best defense is a good offense kind of lawyers. All right. So, you know, you take that as it is, right? Gabe, can you imagine if you were one of these other people on the text? Because who knows who they are, right? Because he's like, yo, I got my boys on the text. He may call that person his boy, but who knows if that person actually thinks Antonio Brown is his boy?
Wonder if those people wish they had a block button.
Man, let me tell you the first thing that I feel like I would do upon receiving this. Please remove me from this thread.
Bomani Jones has left the conversation.
Yes. I'm out. I cannot be a party to any of this, right? No. Please remove me from this conversation. Cause we're assuming it's like, oh, it's all his homeboys. It might be some dude just sitting there, just being like, dog, what are you doing right now? Like, what is this? Are you crazy? What? And I say, chill out with the crazy thing. But what are you doing? And that is the reason why he lost his job, was that, right? Now, if you want to make the argument that people should be losing their jobs behind these allegations of sexual misconduct, I mean, you might have something there if you're not Antonio Brown, right? Because if your argument is, I shouldn't be fired because those dudes might have got away with something, that is not exactly a position supported by the moral imperative. No, it doesn't work. But again, it doesn't matter because that's not why you got fired. You got fired because they didn't know what you were going to do next. And I can't fault them for that. I cannot fault them for that. With this in mind, I kind of want to, like, go back here because I don't really like to do super victory laps, like super I told you so's. Like, I'll hit you with an I told you so, but I don't like to get wild with it. You know, it's not really my steez. However, and I know I'm not the first person to say this, but it's my turn. Where are all you people who told me that Antonio Brown was out here playing chess? You know what I'm saying? He was Antonio Fisher. Y'all remember that? Y'all, people were swearing that Antonio Brown was playing chess, right? And hey, I thought there was something to it. He got him to an extent. He got himself out of Pittsburgh. I did think that part of why he wanted to leave Pittsburgh is because he wanted more guaranteed money. He went to Oakland and he had the guaranteed money, right? Like, I mean, I did think that he kind of pulled something off in that regard. But when he left Oakland and wound up with the Patriots, y'all swore up and down that he was playing chess. He made actually what was a pretty obvious checkers move, which was once they decided to hit him with that conduct detrimental stuff and that allowed them to void the guarantees, he's like, wait a minute, this contract isn't guaranteed? Get me out of here, right? Okay, I think there's something to that. There was a report that he called consultants to figure out how to get the Raiders to cut him. I'm like, damn, you should have given me that money. I could have, it wouldn't have been hard. Let me tell you what I want to see. I might have been like, yo, you really want to get fired? Go steal something from work. Yeah. Go in there. Let them catch you on the cameras, like taking coffee, you know, like the big giant, you know, the big thing. Go ahead, let them catch you lifting some coffee out of there. They'll fire you the next day. No problem. I mean, getting fired. No, man. I can tell you all kinds of tricks about that. No, yeah. I could have got you out of there if that's what you wanted. You need to pay. You could pay me. I don't think you need to pay nobody, but you could pay me. Anyway, that's Antonio Brown. He's ridiculous. Like that was like, okay, so this is what you've done. So now you're out of there. You go to the Patriots. Okay. So now you've turned $30 million into $9 million because the guarantee with the Patriots supposedly was $9 million. But apparently the Patriots are smarter than we gave them credit for being because the Patriots definitely structured that deal just in case he started acting a fool right away. And what do you know? He started acting a fool right away. And I would also like to note that Antonio Brown inexplicably seems to act his worst right before they're about to actually give him the money. Like if he had just made it through week one, really, with the Raiders, he'd have probably got all his money. If he had just got to like next week with the Patriots, he'd have got his money right before it's time to get his money. It all goes ridiculous. So he turned $30 million into like 150 grand. And I need y'all to explain to me what part of the chess game is that. Can one of y'all do that? Because there's people out here riding for Antonio Brown, and I'm asking you kindly, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Like I sent the tweet about like it doesn't matter, you know, he doesn't realize it doesn't matter if he has a point. And people are like, yeah, it does matter, we have a point. I mean, and to be clear, I only had a couple of people explicitly say that I, as a black man, was doing him a disservice by ignoring the fact that he had a point, except for the fact that A, he didn't really have a point. B, the people who are making the argument that he had a point are not actually that concerned with the matters of sexual misconduct as it relates to women, right? So what that means as a result is these cats are basically just saying we should be able to do that too. And we should not. That is not how this should work. It is not. Like, me and my boy Jay Long talking about this yesterday. He's like, yo, man, is this your king? Like, that is the question I ask a lot of people. If you are actually at this point defending Antonio Brown, is this your king? If you worried about Antonio Brown, I think that is perfectly reasonable. You know, like, if you have questions about, like, how is he, I think that's fair, right? Like, if that stops you from going to a judgmental place, I get that. That make all the sense in the world. But nah, man, my cape will stay on the shelf. I like to bring my cape out for occasions that are a little more special. It's a cape after all. Don't put on your cape for Antonio Brown. All right, we'll do If You Haven't Heard in a minute, but first, BET Plus is here. Now you can stream black culture in one place commercial free. BET Plus is the premium streaming service you've been waiting for. Laugh, cry, and cheer with your favorite black movie stars and directors, or binge watch the TV hits you love, like Martin. Tyler Perry fans, BET Plus has more of what you want, too. The best of Tyler Perry stage plays, series, and box office hits. BET Plus is the new home for streaming the best black content creators. You can only stream the new original series Bigger from Will Packer and First Wives Club starring Jill Scott from Tracy Oliver on BET Plus. To stream all of this and more right now, start your free trial and view terms at BET.com/BET Plus. Stream black culture.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from TV and entertainment.
I'm Steve Zajcik with The Washington Post, Friends, Seinfeld, The Office. These all seem like great shows that we've enjoyed and watched and like to quote in barstool conversations from time to time. What they don't really seem like are $500 million or $1 billion businesses. Yet, that's exactly what they've become, as Netflix, Warner's Media, and Comcast have all been among those vying for streaming supremacy and paying top dollar, often a billion of those top dollars, for these shows. It's part of the streaming wars arms race, and right now that's really in full effect, no truce in sight, as these companies are spending a lot of money for the right to own these shows, at least for a couple of years, and put them in their libraries and show them to you on their streaming platforms. What, of course, nobody is talking about, as these dollar figures keep escalating, is whether we really want to watch these shows again and again, and more to the point, whether we're willing to subscribe to services just because they have them. Would you sign up for a streaming service because it had Friends, or cancel it because it didn't? These companies are betting that you will. They may end up overpaying, and we may end up underwatching.
So here's my question. People have demonstrated a capacity to watch old movies and to listen to old music. And we used to watch old television in syndication when we had fewer options, right? What is people's appetite now for going back and watching those shows on demand like that? Like, I really have no idea how persistent that's going to be, or if the next generation is going to find it interesting to go back and watch these shows that faintly resemble anything that they are watching right now. Like the three camera sitcom, right? I grew up watching three camera sitcoms, but the generation above me also grew up watching three camera sitcoms. Like, we're not dealing with a generation now that grew up watching them. You understand what I mean? Like, the medium has kind of changed. So I'm curious to see how many people are going, like, really want to watch that kind of stuff and thereby justifying, the purchases they're making. Cause the other thing too is there really aren't that many shows like syndication. I was talking to somebody about this. I think the Big Bang Theory might have been the last show that was sold into syndication. Like the syndication game is, and I may be missing something very important when I say that, cause that sounds incorrect to me, but like, the point is the syndication game ain't cracking in that way. And so I don't know how much different it is on a streaming service. Like, is this going to make people subscribe? Is this going to make people unsubscribe if it goes away? Because that's what the question always is with the streaming service. And I've never had a great answer on what the value is for them to have that much of the old stuff, given that it's the new stuff that makes people go on the internet and talk about it and then makes people go log on and watch it.
You know, was the box set game so strong on DVD that they're making this big investment thinking that they're going to get returns on it?
That's interesting, because it really was. Like, the DVD was a game change. And I don't know if it was just because it was so much smaller, and I guess they also had the other options of, like, alternate endings and stuff like that. But they could get us to rent tapes. They got us to buy DVDs. And they trying to get that back, dog.
Because I've never been like a rewatch type of person when it comes to shows.
You know, I don't watch a lot, but I've definitely watched The Wire like 15 times.
Okay. So that's one. That's your one favorite show.
Yeah, I have to love it. And I don't love TV like that. And so I don't know if there's anything else that I love that I want to go back and get like the second layer that I might have missed.
What I find funny about the streaming wars is I'll see, yeah, at least like there are a lot of new streaming services that are coming out this year. And so you'll have people tweet out the long list of different streaming services like HBO Max, Disney Plus, Netflix, CBS All Access, Amazon Prime, Peacock, Apple TV Plus, Hulu, ESPN Plus, Stars, you know, all this whole long list, and be like, oh, well, that's really going to add up. The whole point of cord cutting is that I do not have to subscribe to all of these.
Yeah, but a lot of people are subscribed to a lot of services, right? Like, it might not be stacked all the way up, but there, because it's like such a small bite and you can always convince yourself that you can cut it off, right, at any point, I do think there are a lot of people carrying a lot of services that they don't like actually watch, just holding on for that one time that something might come on. I mean, that's how people do it, but that's, to be fair, how people do premium channels on cable. You know, like how many people that had the movie channel back in the day was really just watching the movie channel all the time? They were, the movie channel was something that they could click into and maybe it'll be some stuff on, you know, and that's being replicated with the streaming services, I think. But I think that people want it where if there's this one documentary that everybody's talking about and it's only on insert service here, they got to have the service to watch it. And so they'll get it.
Man, back when cord cutting was cool. I gotta find a new angle now.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you the other thing though, and this is my thing has always been, and I'm in a different position. I'm willing to pay extra for cable because cable is still a superior product, right? Like getting this through the cable is still a better way to do it than to get it through broadband.
And how is that?
A, you don't have the, like, I mean, like, your services slow down on you less than they used to, but that still is something that's not happening when you're doing it, with cable. I think I generally find the sound to be better on cable stuff. Like, I just think it's a better viewing product than doing it through the stream. But I'm also a person that doesn't need to worry about saving that amount of money. Like, if I need to save that amount of money, then that level of quality wouldn't matter that much.
Yeah. I mean, how do you, like, shell out for high-speed internet?
Yeah.
Because if you shell out for high-speed internet, then with the streaming, it's not an issue in terms of, like, latency and all that.
Oh, yeah, you know, no, I totally understand that. But again, we're talking about people who's trying to save money, but then they also over here paying extra for high-streaming internet so they can save their money. There is a circular dance that is going on. This is the point that I would make, is just the people, like, on the premise of economics, is just simply that these folks are, they're not in the business, the streaming services of those people are not in the business of saving you money. Therefore, they know that there is this money that you used to be willing to spend. And now they're all trying to figure out how to get every dime of it. And you're probably going to give it all back to them unless you're willing to cut back on some stuff. And that's what most people are not willing to do.
And now you're giving it directly to them, doing the deal with them instead of having to go through these providers.
That's right. But in the end, people want to have all the channels, even if they don't watch them. And that does stack up. I mean, I'd like to see some actual numbers on people's consumption, to be fair. But I can see why, like, I don't think it's an absurd thing for people to point out that all these things are coming out and there is somebody out there that's got every single one of them.
This next one comes from Music and Entertainment.
Hi, my name's Noah Yu and I'm a staff writer for Pitchfork. Last week I spent several days at a Manhattan courthouse where the famously contentious rapper Tekashi 6ix9ine testified at the criminal trial of two men who prosecutors say are members of the Nine Trey Bloods. The men are currently facing racketeering and firearms charges. 6ix9ine, who is facing similar charges, has been cooperating with federal authorities since his arrest in November of 2018. You might have seen the memes from this past week painting 6ix9ine as a snitch. Over the course of his court appearance, the rapper explained how he initially joined up with the Nine Trey Bloods because he wanted to borrow their aesthetic, so to speak, for his brand. He first asked members of the gang to appear in his music videos near the end of 2017. He also talked about how his successful rap career caused divides among members of Nine Trey, who wanted more control over him as his career got bigger. He also described how one of the men on trial, Anthony Harv Ellison, allegedly kidnapped and robbed him last summer. Maybe the most attention-grabbing part of 6ix9ine's testimony came near the end, when he told prosecutors under oath that Jim Jones of Dipset was a Nine Trey Blood, and that he also understood Cardi B to be a member of a blood set as well. 6ix9ine also referred to Jones as a retired rapper, which some found insulting considering Jones dropped a new album this past May. Under his current charges, 6ix9ine is facing a mandatory minimum sentence of 47 years in prison. But, with the cooperation agreement that he has in place with the government, he could be sentenced to time served and be out as early as next year. Tekashi 6ix9ine's sentencing is currently set for January 2020.
Yo, I feel like some law enforcement agency needs to honor that man at some banquet. Like, he's got to be the man of the year for somebody, right? Like, has anybody done more to try to help law enforcement out than that dude was doing? Like, I'm just saying, like, I feel like if that's what it's really about, like, this dude right here went the extra mile. Wow. 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 And this is what maybe somebody could explain to me about this. This is what I didn't understand. I could understand, from what I could tell, like, all the stuff that he was telling, I could understand you telling law enforcement those things as part of your cooperation agreement. It didn't, as far as I could tell, Gabe, seem to have very much to do with the actual trial.
A little bit out of left field.
Yeah, like, that was what got me. I was just like, yo, this don't even sound like what y'all are talking about. But the idea that he was like, he wanted to borrow their aesthetic, that, you know, he thought it would be good for his credibility to, like, have a relationship with the Bloods. And I mean, you guys know, like, I grew up in a nice, I'd probably term it upper middle class background, right? I ain't from really nothing rough, but I've always been aware that that's not what, how gang relationship, like, I would never think to do that, right? I just feel like they operate under a different kind of ethos, no matter what product I was selling, right? Like, look at a street gang and be like, yeah, I just kind of want to be close to that. You just got to go get a real job. And I guess I've been reading some about how you might wind up in witness protection and how much work they're going to have to do to make that happen. Like, I mean, that's a very distinct young man.
He's going to have to do some work to get those face tats removed.
Yeah, and it all made me feel very old. And I think it made me feel old because I wasn't at all, like, interested. Like, at no point did I see him and want to be interested in his music. Like, it's kind of random now, like, how I actually wind up listening to something new or getting on to somebody new. Because I didn't see anything about him, his steelo, how he kicked it. You know, like, that didn't seem like anything I felt like doing. And so I never did. But, like, then I start seeing this. And I know that, like, if I'm younger, I'm all over this. I'm knee deep in it. I saw this time, and I'm just like, nah, man, I don't even want to participate in the side conversation about this. Like, this is bananas. You know, and I grew up listening to rap in the 90s. It was kind of freewheeling, you know, it was kind of all over the place. But this had me being like, yo, man, what's going on with these youngsters?
So this last story, I thought it was interesting, so I didn't want to switch up on it. Author wasn't able to join us. It's a cultural story. Apparently, there are several states that have taken steps to push employers, schools, and the broader culture to move with them and help dismantle a culture of discrimination experienced by Black women and men who say they continue to face implicit or explicit pressures to conform, unwelcome comments, or even outright discrimination. New Jersey, Tennessee, Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois, and other states have proposed legislation to explicitly ban race-based hair discrimination, tackling a remaining loophole in the law governing discrimination in workplaces, schools, and other public places. California and New York were the first to sign such legislation into law back in July, and New York City issued guidelines on the issue earlier this year. Bomani, your thoughts?
Yeah, I remember, this is a while ago now, Delta once was in the news because they were being accused of discriminating against Black women wearing natural hairdos. And I was like, yo, you doing this in Atlanta? I can't believe you got the nerve. You think you can get away with doing this here? Like that, like what was described was nobody's unicorn. I was like, are you serious? I was not quite aware of just how prevalent this was on like natural hair. Cause see, the thing is, my mother has had natural hair my entire life, but my mother is a college professor. And so that's not the environment where they're going to get on you. And it was at HBCU, right? But like, that's not the kind of place where they're going to get on you about that kind of thing. So I had never really given that a whole lot of thought. But no, man, like that is a wild part of the game that like it feels like, you know, I ain't trying to point no fingers at nobody, but it feels like just another step where this being Black thing would be easier on a lot of white people if we could do whatever we can so they ain't never got to think about it. Right. Because if they think about it, then they go back into what is their default stance on race, which is not a positive one. And so the best that they can do is really just like, just don't make me think about it. It's kind of like the people who, when they say they have no problem with people being gay, but just don't bring that stuff around me. You know what I mean? Like they won't mind you being gay until you holding hands with your boyfriend. Now all of a sudden it's an issue. It feels like a very similar sensation going on over here in this discussion, except not that the gay person in that example should be asked to comply with such things, but at least like, compliance is like possible.
Yeah, there's an interesting line in this story that I thought was kind of important. It says, at a time when diversity issues are getting more attention, employment lawyers say the new state laws did not face significant opposition from the business community, that while some grooming policies may specifically prohibit certain styles, more common are general guidelines that call for, quote, professional or not, quote, extreme looks that can disproportionately lead to bias against Black employees or students.
I also think, though, I'm operating anecdotally here, right? But just kind of sort of a thought. So, like, let's take something like investment banking. And, you know, investment banking is a world that, like, kind of sort of has a look. Like how you dress and, you know, these are guys with, you know, short crop haircuts, you know, the same, you know, kind of suits, you know, like there's a very conservative look, that comes with that. I'm curious about is it doesn't seem to me, cause I don't really kick it in them circles, but it doesn't really seem to me that for those guys dressing and comporting themselves like that is a compromise. Like that's just the kind of cats they are. Does that make sense? Like that's who they are. So like, how often is it that like some white dude walks into the investment bank and he has a haircut that like just call it like long hair, right? Like a dude that's got hair that's down to his collar. How often do you meet a guy that looks like that and what he wants to do is be an investment banker? I've wondered sometimes on that, like how often it even gets tested. Like all those dudes, so many of these industries, all these cats look exactly the same and they don't know what to do with something that deviates from a paradigm that like Black people were never even intended to fit into in the first place because they never thought they was going to ever hire us. And then they get over there and they don't know what to do. They got like absolutely no idea what to do. And so what they do is they freak out at anything that looks different than what they thought we were supposed to be doing. Right. No thought to it whatsoever. It's just like, yo, that's not professional. But the idea of what professional is and what all those people conform to in many cases is something that black people never had the option to conform to in the first place. But that don't mean they're going to stop, you know, trying to make us do it.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. In honor of our man Patrick Beverly, who was working out on the beach in what appeared to be some Timbs.
Yeah, man. I used to call that dude Lugs. I called Tony Allen Timberland Tony, and I used to call him Lugs because they looked like they hooped in boots, and they both from Chicago, and that's a place where people be doing stuff like hooping in boots. And then we saw Patrick Beverly on the beach working out in Timberland boots. And I swear, I feel like he only did that because he know he looked like a dude who played ball in Timberland boots.
Pour one out for Lugs, right? Haven't seen a pair of Lugs in a while.
Yeah. I had to tell Pablo that. Pablo, we was talking about on TV, and Pablo was like, yo, it'll be a bidding war. It should be a bidding war to endorse Patrick Beverly between Lugs and Timberland. And I was like, yeah, I don't think Lugs is still in the league.
Yeah, pour it, when they don't have him at the Foot Locker anymore, you know, it's time to pour one out for Lugs. All right, so we put out for listeners to share stories of when someone showed up to hoop dressed like they were about that life, but only turned out to be either not about that life or were about that life. So our first one comes from Daniel in Lafayette.
Hey, Bo, this is Daniel Jackson from Lafayette, Louisiana. All right, when I was in high school back in 2004, we'd go to the Como Rec Center and shoot hoops after school every now and then. One day, it was packed in there. They had like five teams waiting on the court. And then this dude walked in and like, he tatted up, like ratted up blue jeans and Doc Martens in a flannel shirt. Black dude, man, mind you. But it wasn't like the regular like boat shoes Doc Martens. It was them ugly like plastic Doc Martens that you look like you go duck hunting in. Dude just walked up and was like, hey, you and you, we got next. And I guess everybody knew he was about that life because nobody said a damn thing. And they just stepped on the court. And I'm watching him play basketball. I knew he was about that life because he was garbage. But nobody said nothing, dog. Nothing. They just went along with it like, yeah, we've been waiting here for about 2 hours to get on the court, but I guess we can wait a little longer.
There's nothing like the dude that takes charge of strangers. Like, imagine if you didn't know, right? And you're like, nah, dog, I don't really feel like playing right now.
Yeah, I had to laugh with Florida James this morning when I was going through the voicemails, and I was thinking about this guy walking into the gym like Debo.
Yes.
That's my bike, punks.
That's basically what we got here. And they said he was terrible. Let me tell you about a terrible, like, our brother tells this story. He said he hooped with a LT. He said hooping an LT is LT taking a bunch of 35 footers. And when LT take 35 footer, and he goes, LT in the house? And then the shot go up. He say, Paul come back, LT in the house? And LT put the shot up. And nobody says a word. And if they do say a word, the word is, that was a good look, LT. It's going to fall. Sorry, baby. You good?
Oh, man. There's this movie. I can't remember what the title of it is. It's got Philip Seymour Hoffman in it, and he's kind of like all dressed out when he's playing a little rec ball. And every time he throws up a shot, he says, let it rain! Let it rain! And it just like smacks against the backboard, you know, like way off. Let it rain!
LT in the house? Well, what you gonna say to LT? Because I'm not saying a word.
Yeah, I'm not saying nothing.
Like, I hope LT doesn't hear this.
This next one, this guy didn't leave his name, but it's a similar tune.
Hey, what's up, Bo? So I'm calling about a time we were balling at the park. Dude showed up. We didn't think he was there to ball. He showed up in jeans, black Air Forces, so we should have known there was a problem. So he showed up in the black Air Forces, blue rag, hanging out the pocket. And so we're thinking, oh, this dude, he's just going to sit here, talk a little trash on the side, you know, just try to make himself seen. But he called next, so we already like, here it goes. So he gets on the court, his team starts falling, and of course, dude just happened to be trash. Not only was he trash, but he was a thug who happened to be trash. And so he's going out of his way to, I guess, get himself fouled so he could just have a problem with somebody. And so he's balling, like I said, dude is terrible, and he goes up for a layup, gets blocked by some AAU kid, immediately goes into, oh no, cuz, you don't want these problems, you know, thug stuff. Next thing you know, shirt is off, jeans being pulled up, you black, you know what that means. It's about to go down. So he gets into it, but little did he know, that kid, his whole AAU team was there, and he ended up getting stomped out by about 4 or 5 16 or 17-year-old kids. It was low-key funny as hell. I felt a little bad for him, but hey, when you watch that thug life, stuff like that happens.
Hey, man, shout out to AAU, by the way. You know, I've been a little worried to playing all this summer basketball had taken kids out of the ritual of fighting on the basketball court. But I'm glad that when the moment came, they was ready to snap into action.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
There we go.
We had some good garbage ones. So I know you wanted a good one. So this last one is a good one.
At an open gym run, dude walks in, Chicago Bulls jersey, with his last numbers 187 on it. Had the headband on his like kneecap, had the fresh J's on and the socks. Came out there, threw up a brick, proceeded to dominate the whole rest of the open gym. He lived up to the 187 number. And we should have known who gets the personalized jersey with the name on it with numbers 187. If you about to ball or you about to be trash.
Wow.
187 and the last name on the back of the jersey.
Yo, you know what a 187 jersey with your name on it is called?
What is that?
Probable cause. Like, I feel like that would be admissible in a court of law. I'm not saying whether it should be or not. I'm just telling you, if you get caught, that'd be right up there with your rap lyrics that you had in a notebook from when you was in eighth grade.
That's an easy identifier right there.
Yeah, yeah, no. They're like, yeah, let me look through your car, man. Let me see what you got in here. Okay, yeah, get the blue light. Whew. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsors, ButcherBox and BET Plus. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Steven Zaitchik of The Washington Post. Check out his story on the $1 billion streaming arms race. Thanks to Noah Yu of Pitchfork. Check out his story on Tekashi 6ix9ine's trial and all that snitching. Also, be sure to check out the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. This week, Mina chats with Mike Golic Jr. about Danny Dimes, Mahomes besting Lamar, and the Seahawks losing at home in September for the first time under Pete Carroll. I also look at the top week 4 matchups, including the 3-0 Patriots and the 3-0 Bills. Download and subscribe. Also, subscribe to The Right Time. Wherever you get your podcast, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.